Finally, during recess one hot, cloudless day, we found ourselves occupying the same corner of the playground. I don't remember what we said to each other, but I remember that suddenly she was chasing me around the jungle gyms and swings. She was laughing brightly, and I teased her and dodged this way and that, until she finally caught me and we fell to the ground breathless. When I looked up, I saw a group of children, faceless before the glare of the sun, pointing down at us. "Coretta has a boyfriend! Coretta has a boyfriend!" The chants grew louder as more kids circled around us. "She's not my girlfriend," I stammered. I looked to Coretta for some assistance, but she just stood there looking down at the ground. "Coretta's got a boyfriend. Why don't you kiss her, Mr. Boyfriend?" "I'm not her boyfriend," I shouted. I ran up to Coretta and gave her a slight shove. She staggered back and looked up at me, but still said nothing. "Leave me alone," I shouted again. And suddenly Coretta was running, faster and faster, until she disappeared from sight. Appreciative laughs rose around me. Then the bell rang, and the teachers appeared to round us back into class. For the rest of the afternoon, I was haunted by the look on Coretta's face just before she had started to run, her disappointment, and the accusation. I wanted to explain to her somehow that it had been nothing personal. I just never had a girlfriend before, and I saw no particular need to have one now. But I didn't even know if that was true. I knew only that it was too late for explanations, that somehow I had been tested and found wanting. And whenever I snuck a glance at Coretta's desk, I would see her with her head bent over her work, appearing as if nothing had happened, pulled into herself, and asking no favors. My act of betrayal bought me some room from the other children, and like Coretta, I was mostly left alone. I made a few friends and managed to toss a wobbly football around, but from that day forward, a part of me felt trampled on, crushed, and I took refuge in the life that my grandparents led. After school let out, I would walk the 5 blocks to our apartment. If I had any change in my pocket, I might stop off at a newsstand run by a blind man who would let me know what new comics had come in. Gramps would be at home to let me into the apartment, and as he lay down for his afternoon nap, I would watch cartoons and sitcom reruns. At 4:30, I would wake Gramps, and we would drive downtown to pick up Toot. My homework would be done in time for dinner, which we ate in front of the television. There I would stay for the rest of the evening, negotiating with Gramps over which programs to watch, sharing the latest snack food he discovered at the supermarket. At 10 o'clock, I went to my room. Johnny Carson came on at that time, and there was no negotiating around that. And I would fall asleep to the sounds of Top 40 on the radio. Nestled in the soft, forgiving bosom of America's consumer culture, I felt safe. It was as if I had dropped into a long hibernation. I wonder sometimes how long I might have stayed there had it not been for the telegram Toot found in the mailbox one day. "Your father's coming to see you," Toot said. "Next month, 2 weeks after your mother gets here. They'll both stay through New Year's." She carefully folded the paper and slipped it into a drawer in the kitchen. Both she and Gramps fell silent, the way I imagine people react when the doctor tells them they have a serious but curable illness. For a moment, the air was sucked out of the room, and we stood suspended, alone with our thoughts. "Well," Toot said finally, "I suppose we better start looking for a place where he can stay." Gramps took off his glasses and rubbed his eyes. "Should be one hell of a Christmas."